Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really significant corporate governance case, one that still resonates in boardrooms, in REIT, the Walt Disney Co. derivative litigation.
Yeah, this is a key one for law students. Think of it as a deep look into director duties, liability, especially, you know, when huge sums of money for executives are involved.
Exactly. It really gets into the business judgment rule. What are its boundaries? Specifically, we're looking at this massive $130 to $140 million severance payout to Michael Ovitz.
After a pretty short stint as president, too.
Right. Only about 14 months. So the central question is, did the Disney board fail? Did they breach their fiduciary duties when they approved his hiring contract and then his termination package?
Were they just, you know, rubber stamping decisions? That's what the shareholders alleged. It really forces us to ask what oversight truly means for a board.
Okay, so let's set the scene a bit. It starts back in 1995. Disney hires Michael Ovitz, a major Hollywood power player at the time, as its president.
And crucially, he was a very close friend of Michael Eisner, Disney's CEO. That relationship is sort of a background character throughout this whole saga.
A factor the court definitely noted. So let's get into the contract itself. Ovitz's employment agreement, or OEA. This is key.
Absolutely. Beyond the usual salary and options, it had this really critical non-fault termination clause.
That's the core of it, isn't it? Explain what that meant practically.
Well, it meant that if Ovitz left without cause, basically, if he was let go but hadn't done anything wrong contractually, he still got a massive payout.
And we're talking serious money. Continued salary for a time, bonuses, an extra $10 million cash just for termination.
And the big one, immediate vesting of stock options. Those were potentially worth, what, $80 to $100 million at the time?
A huge potential liability for Disney right from the start.
It essentially created this golden parachute, almost regardless of how well he actually performed in the role. Think about the incentives there.
Yeah, that's a good point. And this is where the shareholder lawsuit really takes root. They alleged the board's approval process was, well, flawed.
Not so.
The claim was minimal review, especially by the compensation committee, that they didn't really dig into the potential cost of those stock options vesting early.
Or the total financial exposure Disney faced under that non-fault termination clause.
Exactly. There were allegations they didn't get a full picture, and reportedly the final negotiation details were largely left to Eisner.
Delegated to the CEO, who was also the close friend of the person being hired. That definitely raises questions about process, about checks and balances.
It certainly became a focal point. So fast forward about 14 months, Ovitz is out.
Yeah, the relationship soured, performance issues were cited. It just wasn't working.
And because it was structured as a non-fault termination, boom, that huge severance package gets triggered, somewhere between $130 and $140 million.
Ouch. You can see why shareholders weren't happy.
Understandably. So they filed a derivative lawsuit. Just quickly for listeners, that's shareholders suing on behalf of the company, usually against directors or officers, alleging they harmed the company through breaches of duty.
Okay, so that brings us to the legal fight. What were the core questions the court had to grapple with?
Well, primarily, did the directors breach their fiduciary duties? Specifically, the duty of care acting informed and diligently, and the duty of loyalty acting in the best interests of the company, not their own or, say, a friend's.
And was the payout so egregious, so lacking in benefit to Disney, that it constituted corporate waste? That's a tough claim to prove, but it was definitely on the table.
Right. And there was another layer, too. Disney's corporate charter had an exculpatory clause.
Oh, yes. Section 102(b)(7) of the Delaware General Corporation Law allows companies to shield directors from personal liability for breaches of the duty of care, basically for carelessness.
So the question was, would that clause protect the directors here, even if they had breached their duty of care?
And it's really important to remember the stage this was at. We're talking about a motion to dismiss.
Good point. What does that mean exactly?
It means the court isn't deciding guilt or innocence yet. It's looking at the allegations made by the shareholders and asking, if we assume these facts are true for a moment, is there a plausible legal claim here? Could these directors potentially be found liable?
So it's about the potential validity of the claim.
Precisely. And this case had already been up to the Delaware Supreme Court once before on an earlier motion.
Right. In Brehm v. Eisner.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court sent it back saying that shareholders needed to plead more specific facts, suggesting the directors acted in bad faith, not just carelessly.
Okay. So with that higher bar set, what did the Chancery Court decide on this motion to dismiss, the one we're focusing on?
Well, Significantly, it denied the motion to dismiss regarding the duty of care and duty of loyalty claims.
Meaning the lawsuit could proceed on those grounds. Why? What was the court's thinking, particularly on the duty of care?
The court basically said the allegations, if true, suggested the board might not have been adequately informed. The alleged lack of detailed analysis on the OEA's costs, the limited questioning, the heavy reliance on Eisner.
It painted a picture of a potentially passive board, didn't it?
It did. And this is where the court made a crucial distinction between simple negligence or carelessness and something more serious, bad faith.
Explain that difference. It's vital here.
Well, the court suggested that if the board didn't just fail to be careful, but consciously disregarded its known duties, like, say, approving a $140 million payout without any real discussion or understanding of the terms that could potentially rise to the level of bad faith.
And bad faith is treated very differently under the law, right?
Absolutely. The business judgment rule, which normally protects director decisions, assumes good faith. If bad faith is plausibly alleged, that protection can fall away.
And what about that exculpatory clause, the 102b7 provision?
The court made it clear. Those clauses protect against duty of care breaches, essentially, monetary liability for carelessness. But they don't protect against breaches of the duty of loyalty or acts taken in bad faith.
So if the shareholders could prove bad faith later on, the clause wouldn't save the directors from liability.
Correct. The bad faith allegation was key to potentially getting around that shield.
And the corporate waste claim.
The court let that proceed, too, at this stage. It acknowledged waste is a very high bar. The transaction has to be almost irrational, like giving away assets for no reason.
But the sheer size of the Ovid's payout, given his short tenure.
Exactly. The court found it was at least arguable that this massive payout lacked any rational business purpose for Disney, enough to survive the motion to dismiss.
The chancellor at the time, Chancellor Chandler, even wrote something quite pointed about the board's alleged attitude, didn't he?
Yes, he characterized the plaintiff's allegations as painting a picture of a board that effectively said, "We don't care about the risks." That phrase really captured the essence of the concern about conscious disregard.
So this initial decision to let the case proceed sent some shockwaves, right? What are the big takeaways?
Huge takeaways. It really underscored that boards have a duty to be actively engaged, especially with executive compensation. You can't just rely on management presentations without asking tough questions.
It showed that process matters. Even if the decision itself might seem defensible later, a flawed process can open the door to liability claims.
And it hammered home that exculpatory clauses aren't a blank check. Allegations of bad faith, if credible, can pierce that armor.
Plus, it revitalized the idea that corporate waste claims, while difficult, aren't impossible in truly extreme payout situations.
Definitely. And you see the legacy today, right?
Yep.
Much more common use of independent compensation consultants, detailed scenario planning for executive contracts. Boards are generally more cautious, partly because of cases like this.
Okay, now here is a really important clarification we need to make. We've been talking about the court denying the motion to dismiss.
Right, allowing the case to go forward based on the allegations.
But what happened in the end, after a full trial on the merits?
This is crucial. After the trial, years later, the court ultimately found the directors not liable.
So they won in the end.
They did. The court, after hearing all the evidence, concluded that while the board's process might have been flawed in some ways, their actions didn't actually rise to the level of bad faith or a breach of loyalty, and the payout wasn't legally waste.
So that initial ruling denying dismissal was just about whether the claims were plausible enough to investigate further, not a final judgment.
Exactly. It was about pleading standards, not ultimate proof. The court found the initial allegations concerning enough to warrant a full trial. But the evidence presented at trial didn't ultimately support liability.
Still, even without a finding of liability, the case had a massive impact, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It served as a major wake-up call for boards everywhere about process, documentation, and active oversight, particularly regarding executive pay. The scrutiny itself changed behavior, even if these specific directors weren't ultimately penalized financially.
So, for law students listening, what's the key lesson from the whole Disney-Ovid saga?
I think it's the critical importance of directors being informed, engaged, and diligent, asking questions, understanding the details, especially when the numbers are this big. Process really, really matters in Delaware law.
And it leaves you thinking, doesn't it? Like, what are the concrete steps a board should take to demonstrate they're truly informed? How do you balance needing to make decisions efficiently with that absolute duty of fiduciary care?
It's a constant tension, and this case is just one piece of the puzzle in understanding Delaware corporate law. There are many other fascinating cases on director liability worth exploring.
Absolutely. It really highlights that ongoing push and pull between empowering corporate leaders and ensuring they're held accountable through robust, independent oversight, a balance that's still being navigated in boardrooms today.